Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Rubbing is Great. Sorry that I was delayed there for a second. I'm so used to every show there being an intro, some kind of intro music or intro to the show, and I was sitting waiting for the intro, and it slipped my mind. There's not an actual intro for the show. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Kicking the 2017 season off, first episode of Rubbing is Racing for the year. Got Steve back in the studio. Get ready to plug him in here in just 1 second. Just glad to take an opportunity to be glad. I'm just glad to be back here for another season. Glad that Steve's going to have me with him for another season of Rubbing is Racing. And looking forward from what I saw, I don't know what Steve's going to say here in a second, but from what I saw, I'm definitely excited and ready for the 2017 season. I'm expecting a lot of action this year from what we've seen already. So, I thought that was Steve, even though it was a different number. I thought that was Steve in the studio. So, give me 1 second, and there's Steve. We get him in the studio. Steve, how you doing tonight? Are you there, Steve? Sounds like Steve is having technical difficulties. Yep. Let's see what we'll try this again. See? Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Good deal, Lou Phil.
Glad to have you back for the 2017 season. How you doing? And hello, NASCAR.
Yeah, good to be back. I'm glad I'm here.
Season kicks off. We got different drivers and different driving for different teams driving under new manufacturers, and we got a whole new format to how our races are being held and how they're conducting business. So far, your thoughts at the beginning of the 2017 season?
I'm kind of on the fence about the stages, but it worked out pretty good today. It was really interesting. It was a real good race, I thought.
So did I. I was already one that I was already all in on the stages. And I will admit, watching the truck race and catching the highlights of the Xfinity Series race, you didn't know quite how to judge things. You didn't know if that was the lack of talent, the young drivers just on the big stage, or if it was the stages. And then we watched today's race, and the stages really didn't factor into the Cup guys' wrecks. It just seemed over-anxious and just careless driving. As a matter of fact, I messaged Mike, and I was wondering if everybody just forgot how to drive a car in the off-season, because I can't remember a Daytona weekend being this full of wrecks all across all the series. I was starting to wonder if we was going to have just as many cars as we had in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series race even finished. We're talking barely double-digit cars.
Yeah, it was definitely a bit of a wreck fest, but it was still rather interesting.
Oh, yeah.
The way the strategy played out, the Toyota teams pitting early during the stages so they could make it to the end of the stage without having to pit then. But I don't think that strategy is going to work at Atlanta. So it's going to be a whole nother deal there, and I'll be interested to see how the strategy works out there.
Now, when this whole stage thing first got introduced, you weren't sold on them, the stages mattering to the drivers. You figured it'd be just business as usual. Nobody was really going to make moves and really push the issue. And one of the stages, we saw them push the issue coming around that last lap. Do you think that this stage thing is going to change things up a little bit? And do you see us having more of the stages coming down, so drivers making moves like we saw? I think they went 2 and 3 wide or something, going down to one of those stages. I think the second stage, when the second stage was ending, got a little, as a matter of fact, I think it was a 22 and 4 were blocking each other or whatever. Do you think maybe where we are going to see some we're going to see these stages intensify things during parts of the races we normally wouldn't see?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to make a big difference in how the races run and what the outcome of the race is going to be. Like I said, it's going to be a whole different show at Atlanta on a mile and a half track. It's going to be a whole different deal on the short tracks too, as far as the crew chief strategy goes. I kind of like the stages, but then again, I'm old school. I don't really agree with the format, but I like the fact that you can't take the car in the garage and put new parts on it or you're out. You know, it's kind of the old school way where you had to fix what you had and run what you had then. So that part to me was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you on it. I know that's it. I think the most negative feedback I've seen on social media and comments that I've seen made is about the 5-minute rule. I liked it. One, I don't recall there being any debris caution at this rate. If I'm correct, there was none. I like the fact that we didn't have a bunch of junk cars out there throwing off debris, changing the outcome of the race. I feel that you know, that it plays favor to drivers that are laps down, because you start making laps up when cars are out there. And I, you know, I'm not saying there's team orders, but I could see teams saying, just get a car out there. If parts fall off, oh well, so and so's a couple laps down, we need some lucky dog. There's many perks to, and the first thing a lot of drivers brought up was safety. You know, and safety of the drivers and safety of the fans. As I know that NASCAR was still dealing with the, I believe the Kyle Larson wreck. I think they finally settled that out of court, or settled that in the court or whatever, just before the season. One of the big wrecks that we had, I believe it was the Kyle Larson wreck, that he went up into the catch fence when he was driving the Xfinity Series race. So I like it. I know that it pissed a couple people off. I know that, you know, when we first saw that, the truck race, it's like, oh, wow, you know, this ain't going to work. But I look at it as, if your car needs more than 5 minutes of fixing, then you're probably not going to be relevant anyway, and you're probably just going to be in the way. So I like it. If you can't get it fixed in 5 minutes, then you're done. And I like that. And, you know, it sucks for someone like Terry Jones in the Xfinity Series race. He was like at 5 minutes and 20 seconds. We have Mark Redd on the 110 Nation Sports Show all the time, his partner of Redd Jones Racing. And, you know, I felt kind of bad for him, because you were outside of that window by 20 seconds. Obviously, the Xfinity Series and the Sprint Cup Series learned, and we need to watch these clocks a lot better. We need to work with them to know our time, because, there was a few people that got close, but I don't think anybody, whatever. As a matter of fact, I think one driver had like 30 seconds that they were allowed to play with still, well, a minute, 30 seconds in their pit call, 30 minutes up and down, up down pit road. But as it played out today, and you learned that if they got up to speed, that 5-minute clock was eliminated, you can go back in and work on it. I think as it played out a little bit more during this race, I like that rule much, much more, knowing a little bit more of the details of it.
Yeah, I like that rule too. I think it clarifies the excitement, so to speak. You're dealing with a 5-minute clock, so you don't have a lot of time. Dale Jr. was a prime example last year. If he'd have wrecked like he did then, they would have slapped a new nose on it and a new fenders and Barabond and got him back out there running, where this year you can't do that. You can't add the new parts. You've got to fix what you got. And, you know, if you go in the garage, you're out. So I really like that idea and that format, and like everything else, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it'll be interesting to see how that strategy works at Atlanta. I think it puts a lot of the load back on the crew chief and the engineers have to decide what to do strategy-wise and how to beat that segment racing and how to get yourself in position to be in the top 10 at the end of the segment and pick up those bonus points.
How quickly do you think the conspiracy theory people out there are going to be spreading the fact that Monster Energy takes over as title sponsor, and in the very first race, Monster Energy Carter finds its way into the thing? I'm waiting for those conspiracy theories out there to unleash on social media. But what, in all seriousness, what better way to start kick off your year as being the title sponsor with build up going into the Daytona with just the Monster Ladies? That stirred up everything. And some people were offended by their outfits, which really was no worse than the Sprint Cup girls that wore the skin tight driver suit, fire suits, or whatever. The Coors Light pole lady wore the same thing. In any other sports, you've got cheerleaders and everything else, so that was just ridiculous anyway. But you go from that to your sponsor finds itself in victory lane. You got Monster plastered everywhere to include Kurt Busch and Pat. What better way to kick off your title sponsor debut with NASCAR than the weekend that Monster had?
Monster Energy really put on a show in the Fan Zone Saturday, bringing in some of their other vehicles, like the off-road trucks and stuff like that. I think it added a lot to the weekend and definitely added a lot to Saturday. They had the Monster Energy girls out. And like you said, you know, Monster Energy was plastered all over. So I think they definitely got their money's worth. And I think they'll continue to put on a show like they did Saturday with the Fan Zone and really get the fans more involved in the racing.
Now, I know that you saw the report of people being upset. Was you kind of surprised that there was the reaction there was over the Monster Cup lady?
No, not really. I think, you know, given their past track record and the way they do things in the past, I think they've adapted it really well to NASCAR. And I think they're going to be a sponsor whose presence hasn't been seen like that in quite a while in NASCAR. So I'm glad for them. I think they really add something to the sport, and I think they'll continue to add to the sport. And I think it'll draw in more fans, especially the younger group.
We saw a lot of wrecks, red flags, and a lot of poor vehicles in the Truck Series race and the Xfinity Series race. I'm chalking it up to a lot of young, up-and-coming talents that rookies, just young, inexperienced, out there on the track. One, is that the same thought process that you had? And two, if so, what needs to happen to fix this? Because we can't go through another weekend in the Truck Series race and the Xfinity Series race having the complications and the wrecks and the red flags and the torn up vehicles that we've seen.
Well, a lot of people were saying it was due to inexperience by the drivers, but you saw a lot of crashes today, and these are the best drivers in the sport. So I don't think it was the inexperience so much as it was just racing the segments, trying to get yourself in position to pick up those bonus points that caused a lot of problems for a lot of drivers.
I thought it was a lot of young rookie mistakes. And it was sad because we've seen a lot of young, talented drivers. We had Noah Gragson on last week on the show. I was pulled for him in the Truck Series race. There was just a lot of rookies, and one of the wrecks happened, lap two, for the Truck Series race, that now they're still kind of really rookies because they did not even get but two laps into the Daytona 500, and we didn't really get a chance to see what 2017 is going to bring for the Truck Series. So now the next race, we're even more excited and more eager because now we kind of got a taste watching them practice and watch them qualify, but we didn't get I didn't get enough of an appetite off seeing what I seen because two laps into the Truck Series race started his mayhem. Obviously going weeks forward, I'm definitely going to be excited to see what these young, talented rookie drivers, and young, talented, especially drivers that we've had on the show and that we've got to watch the K&N Pro Series and then the ARC Series. Now it's made their way up to the Truck Series. I just hope that everybody learns to settle down a little bit and let the race come to it. It just seemed that even in the Cup Series race, we've seen the same thing. Things happen a little too early. People getting a little too aggressive. We watched them even try to go four wide in the Cup Series. And I know that there's a lot of energy this year and new sponsors and new teams and new formats and a lot of things going on. It just seems that everybody just needs to kind of settle down. It's almost like everybody acting like they've never been there before and didn't know how to. It was like a three-year-old on a Christmas morning and just didn't know what to do or where to go, but just dive into it. And I'm curious to see and eager to see come next week if things kind of calm down and, these drivers learn from their mistakes and learn that the race needs to come to us, not us trying to be over-aggressive and force things that shouldn't be going on.
Yeah, over-aggressive is the key word there. I think there was a lot of drivers in the Xfinity Series and Truck Series races that are trying to prove themselves to their sponsors and to their teams. And they're looking to take, they look at Daniel Suarez, the way he's come up to Cup through the Truck in the Xfinity Series. And I think they want to follow that path. And I just think they got too aggressive. It's, Daytona's the big show, so you really want to do good there. And a lot of them, tried to do good and didn't do good. So I'm hoping they'll calm down for the next races and use their head more and not be so aggressive.
Definitely. The Cup Series race, that was interesting to me. I honestly, watching the first two stages, and it seemed to be pretty calm. They were a little eager, but pretty calm. No wrecks, no real bullheaded moves. And until after we got into the third stage, things got kind of crazy. Was that the drivers? Was that the change in the condition of the track? The track got cooler. What contributed all of a sudden? It seemed like once we hit stage three of the 500, things just kind of got hectic and crazy, and driving just—I don't know—it seemed like decision making. Was it strictly the decision making? Did they just think that there was more underneath them than what was going on? What changed from the first two thirds of the race to that last third of the race when it came to the Cup Series?
You get to that third stage, and the strategy falls back to the way it used to be and the way it should be. Excuse me. But, you know, when you get to the third stage, it's all about racing to the end then and racing for the win. So you've got to use your head more. You've already used strategy to get to that point. And then it's up to the driver to bring it home. And I like that. I think that's a smart move and a smart way to go. To, like today, you know, to try to observe your equipment. And it got to be single file racing in the third stage, which is expected at Daytona, and you wait. You get down to inside five laps to go, and then that's when you make your move. And that's when the excitement and the energy level picks up. So I think, you know, that was more conventional racing, so to speak, in that third stage than there was in the first two.
Kurt Busch, in a Ford, finds himself in the victory lane. Is this a product of plate racing that we found? Because we had Ford in victory lane last year. Is Joey Logano just won it last year? So I don't want to overanalyze this, but the Ford sweep did look rather impressive. Did Ford finally hit on something? Was this move by Stuart Haas the right move? Now we get an opportunity to one race into the season, or do we need to wait and analyze what's going to land in Las Vegas first? See if Ford is here, because I know it's one of the things they talked about in the booth, that the manufacturer now looks like we got a three manufacturer race now that Ford looks like they're finally in the fight. Are we jumping the gun on it, or does it look like Ford really has finally stepped up to the plate and has brought a product that's competitive this year?
I think, you know, some people seem surprised that Kurt Busch finished first and was up there at the end, but he's been a bridesmaid, I think they said, three times in the past. So he definitely knows how to race at Daytona, and he showed today that he's capable of winning at Daytona.
It was definitely good to see Kurt Busch. He was 17th Daytona 500. It was good to see his crew chief. Very emotional. It was really good to see a mature Kurt Busch. I mean, obviously, it's easy to be mature being a winner, but the respect that he had for his wife and, you know, and the time things that he said, regardless of his victory later or not, has not always been a Kurt Busch thing. So it's good to see not only Kurt Busch in victory lane, but to see a mature Kurt Busch, not that one that used to run at the mouth and find himself in trouble and everything else, and the one that offered himself a ride over at Roush Fenway, but the mature one that found himself at Stuart Haas, really kind of turned his career around. I mean, he was always a good driver, but it seems like, to me, Kurt Busch over there with Tony Stewart, it's almost been like any football player that's kind of been that rebel going to play for Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots. Once they go over there, you never really hear about them anymore. They fall in, they adapt, and they become part of that system. And it don't matter if it was Randy Moss, it don't matter who it was. And once they went to go play for Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots, they got out of the spotlight. They were a team player, and they knew their role. They adapted to it, and bought into it, and it seems like the same thing has happened to Kurt Busch. You know, no matter where he was at, you know, he had that temper. He put his foot in his mouth, and it seems like since he's been a Stuart Haas, kind of, you know, he's fell into his place, and he's over, you know, he's adapted to that system. He's adapted to what, you know, what they expect, and he's done that great, and it's just great to see him not only in victory lane, but to see him be mature and be that driver and that all-around driver, not just a good driver on the track, but represent Stuart Haas, represent Monster Energy, represent NASCAR the way he should have been doing all along.
Yeah, one of the highlights to me was just the pure, unadulterated joy that him and his team showed that he parked the car out there at the start-finish line, and the team ran out, and they all grouped together, giving each other hugs and pats on the back and everything. The whole team was just overcome with joy, you know, and it really shows that he has a team behind him, and he has a team that's with him, and they all work together to accomplish that goal. And he was, you know, so full of joy at winning and everything. And then when he got to victory lane and they started the interviewing and stuff, he composed himself and really represented Monster Energy really well and Stuart Haas Racing. I mean, the guy showed a lot of class, and I was glad to see it. I was glad for him, and I'm glad for Stuart Haas Racing. I think that now it's not just Kevin Harvick that's in the spotlight. It's also going to be Kurt Busch, because he'll be, when they do driver introductions the rest of the year, he'll be introduced as the Daytona 500 champion. And I just think it was great for the whole organization all the way around.
I mean, the whole organization had a really good day going. Danica placed in the top 10 both of the first two stages. Clint Bowyer was having a great run. Kevin Harvick, and unfortunately all of them got caught up, except for Kurt Busch, which hit damage his own car. But all of them were caught up in stuff that they could not continue on. But all in all, I got to say, Stuart Haas, I think that we might see, and I know this is going to be a statement I'm probably going to take back, or wish I could take back at some point, but we might see all four of those cars in victory lane this year. I think if Danica wins one, it will be in a restrictor plate race. I think it'll be her avoiding the big one. But she was rather impressive in how this season started off. It just seems like that whole organization, period. And I said this, and I called it on Wednesday night. Mike can verify this. I picked the Stuart Haas Racing car to win the race. I didn't pick which one it was going to be, but I knew it was going to be a Stuart Haas race, because Stuart Haas felt that they had something to prove with this changeover, that they could handle it and put themselves back in victory lane, and that Ford was serious about what they, you know, what they promised Stuart Haas, and was going to come with a product really good so that they could win the race. But I called it a Stuart Haas race. Member, I didn't think it would be Kurt Busch. I honestly thought it was going to be Kevin Harvick, but I did say it would be a Stuart Haas vehicle, which the whole team, like I said, was having a very good day, and I could have seen all four of those cars be in the top 10 easily before the race was over.
Yeah, I think Stuart Haas Racing is going to turn out to be one of the top teams in the sport. I see them doing like Joe Gibbs Racing did last year, and just really putting together strings of victories. And I think all four cars are capable of winning, and all four drivers are capable of winning, and all four teams are capable of winning. For lack of a better term, Stuart Haas Racing has got their shit together. And I think it's really going, I think as the season goes on, they're really going to show their strength. Don't know what's going to happen in the chase, but I think during the regular season, Stuart Haas Racing, week in and week out, is going to be the organization to beat.
Now, another thing that I found to be really interesting was we seen the Toyotas work really good last year. And to watch the pitch strategy, to watch all six Toyotas come down together out of sync, and then watch all the Fords try to do the same thing. It was just interesting. It's like the Fords caught on in the off, you know, from last season. Okay, what we need to do, and it's like it gave Penske an opportunity. Okay, now we got six of us, legitimate, well, seven, counting, I almost forgot, Ryan Blaney. So you got the two Penskes, you've got their satellite team in the Wood Brothers car, and you got the four Stuart Haases, especially in a track like the Super Speedway. now, you know, now we can do the same thing that Toyota did so good last year to help find them win as many races and be as dominating as they were. Now, of course, going into Atlanta, Las Vegas, and so forth and so forth, we're going to have to see how that works. But we also, you know, I remember last year with some of those tracks, it was an advantage to be on the inside. So if you had or on the out, yeah, inside. But we watched a lot of times that first place guy take the outside so you can back him up or he can come down and get in front and vice versa. We saw how well they worked. They were willing to sacrifice and let the other person get the lead to get down a single file at the smaller track. So I'm curious to see to what extent Ford and those Ford teams, more so, not Ford itself, but Penske and Stuart Haas, are they willing to sacrifice for the better of the good throughout the race until the end, like we watched with Toyota, well, the Joe Gibbs Racing and Furniture Row Racing, like we saw them last year. But I did get a chuckle out of watching how this strategy played out. And I hope that Ford is come forward ready to go. So I would like to see this manufacturer war play out. I would like to see three very competitive manufacturers. The Hendrick Motorsports and RCR going up against Joe Gibbs Racing and Furniture Row Racing and Penske. Like I can see this if it plays out. The way that it looks like it's played out, this is going to be a very interesting year, and I want to see, one, if the four guys, the four teams can play nice all season long, while I could watch the Toyota team, and I'm curious to see at what point of the year that bond breaks, and when somebody finally gets frustrated or we get into the chase and see what team alliances break up first. And become enemies and whatnot. I think this year is going to be rather interesting when it comes to all that.
Yeah, right now you can see that the Toyota teams are really working together and really playing off one another to get all the Toyota teams together and on the same page in the race. And if the Ford teams could put their egos in check and learn from what Toyota's doing and carrying it over to their organizations and getting themselves lined up to where they're helping each other to get the brand in victory lane so much as, you know, the individual drivers. So like I said, if they can just get their egos in check and start working together like Toyota, Ford could be a dominant force in racing. I don't see the Chevrolet teams doing that. I think it's still going to be the Hendrick Motor Cars and then the rest of them. But I think if Ford will take a cue from what Toyota's doing and use it to their advantage on their teams, I think Ford could really become the dominant brand in racing.
Now, I definitely want to shout out to Chris Buescher. Up until he got caught up in that wreck, was having a great day. That 37 machine was up there. I wish that Chris Buescher, now seeing him put Front Row Motorsports into victory lane last year and already seeing what he is doing with his new team, with the JTG Daughtry, I wish really he would get an opportunity to be on a even better run, better funded organization. I still think that Buescher is getting cheated out of the. I think us as the fans are getting cheated out of the potential and the talent that is really there. And I'm very curious to see how far he takes this. One, them going to a two-car team. You know, this is all new to JTG Goddard Racing, but also how far can he take that? Can he put another team that we don't expect to be into the chase like we saw last year?
Yeah, you know, those Front Row Motorsports and JGR and everything could really, you know, if Hendrick Motorsports would just share information with them, they don't have to share parts and everything like that, but just pass along information to these other Chevrolet teams to get them running better and more in line with what Hendrick Motorsports is doing. But I just don't see that happening. I can see it with Ford and Toyota, but I just don't see it happening with Chevrolet. Hendrick Motorsports is the upper level, and then there's a big gap between the next level. And I think Hendrick Motorsports, if they chose to, could help close that gap by helping those other teams.
Do you think you think they would be willing to, as we see how important it is, especially at these big tracks? And I understand it only makes, what, about a tenth of the season, but that's still four tracks. Talladega is one of them that's in the chase, and the second Daytona trip is not too far before the chase. So you're a good portion into the season, and you're already trying to strategize to get yourself into the chase. You would think that they would work on building their alliance and giving themselves a couple more cars to be teams and folks there with, like we see with the Toyotas, because they talked about the four cars being together. Because when we watched the first round of pits, and we watched what Eric Jones and what Matt Kenseth, I think they were the two that had issues and had to go back down pit road. And they talk about the difference of them having three or four cars together versus having six cars together. And so you would think that going this and watching the Toyota teams work together, and we watched Penske and Stuart Haas work together, going the six cars together was so much better than just three or four cars. You think that they would try to reach out and make sure that they build that alliance, make sure that those cars are able to maintain, you know, be competitive to help them when it comes down to that situation. That kind of has me scratching my head, and I agree with you. I just don't see the Chevy team, the Hendrick, working the way that we're watching Joe Gibbs Racing and Bernie Rowe and so forth and so forth. You think that, you know, that light bulb would go on and be like, you know what, especially these big tracks, we need to make sure we have more help, and we have, you know, an alliance built, and I agree with you. I don't see them doing it, and I think it's going to end up biting them in the butt this year.
Yeah, Hendrick Motorsports has nothing to lose by helping the other Chevrolet teams and sharing information, and it's pretty obvious the way Toyota is racing now and the way they raced last year, that by sharing information, you get all your teams stronger. And then, you know, on race day, it's every man for himself. But you've got the other teams becoming better, and it's not making you worse. And I just don't think that Hendrick Motorsports sees it that way. I think they want to be the dominant team, and they think by not sharing information and everything that that's best for them, and it might be, but they could offer so much more to the other Chevrolet teams and help them get better, not help them, Hendrick Motorsports, just help the other Chevrolet teams be better. And, you know, it's still, when it comes down to it on race day, it's your team and your crew and your driver. And so, you know, like I said, I don't think it's going to hurt Hendrick Motorsports to make the other Chevrolet teams better.
Eric Jones, a big name that was making his debut in the Cup Series, amongst others, Daniel Suarez was another one, which that whole post-wreck interview was kind of interesting to me. I know that when they interviewed Suarez, it kind of kind of cut almost cut short, or he kind of talked into the next, he was either rec or pit stop, but it was just kind of awkward. I don't know. They were like, okay, and they kind of moved on. Like, they either didn't understand what he was saying, or they were just trying to cut over to what was going on, which is really weird to me. Eric Jones making his debut in the 77 Toyota. Kind of a quiet day. I was really kind of expecting more attention to be on, especially with them being a two-car organization now. Really wasn't a lot. Just kind of quiet. It's like they were talking just as much about Chris Buescher and the JTG team forming a second car, second team on their organization as Eric Jones. I was just expecting more of a build-up and more focus on that. Didn't quite have the day he was expecting to have. Obviously, he got tangled up in the Kyle Busch tire going flat. And I about fell out when he interviewed Kyle Busch and said, Goodyear tires ain't good at home there. I think I
about fell on my people. How can I put this? In the Cup garage, there's a pecking order, and you have to gain respect of the other drivers to move up in that order. And I think, you know, Eric Jones being a rookie and everything, he doesn't have the respect of the other drivers yet. And I think that comes with how he races in the first races, the first group of races in the season. And as he earns respect from them and Suarez too, you know, as they earn respect, they'll get more respect in return. But you know, you can just as easily not earn the respect of the other drivers and get where they won't work with you at all during the race. So it's going to be interesting to see as the season goes on how those two drivers, how they fit in with the other drivers in the Cup garage, and how the other drivers will start working with them and giving them advice and everything and trying to help them out.
Now, two things we saw at the end of the race, and I got to know your thoughts from your experience out here. One, we watched them for the last, I don't know, up until we got about 3 or 4 laps left, them run single file on the top row. Which was brought up in the post race, you know, with these cars, fuel mileage, and them running out of fuel, really has me questioning why they were running so high on the track. Anyway, you're taking the longest route around the track going, you guys are really close on fuel. So my first question is, why were they single file for so long, and why were they riding so close to the wall, knowing all of them were real close on the fuel mileage? And then two, I know once upon a time, Joey Logano was a hothead. Nobody really wanted to work with him. His ego kind of exceeded himself and everything else. But Joey Logano, I hate saying this, has calmed down a lot. He's a very mature driver and is a really good veteran at this point. Yes, he's got his moments, him and the whole Kansas thing. But for the most part, Logano is a seasoned veteran that I think almost any team owner would be proud to have as their driver at this point. Why could he not get any help? He had a strong car. Why did nobody want to work with Joey Logano? Do people not trust him or not like him that much? Why would you not work with Logano with those few laps left?
I don't know. I don't understand that, really. Logano's a proven winner and a veteran of racing, but for some reason, I don't think, you know, we go back to the respect. I don't think he has the respect in the Cup garage. And I think that hurt him today. He just couldn't get any help. It was like nobody wanted to help him. And they would help other people before they'd help him. And I don't know what he's got to do to earn back the respect he had before. I think the incidents with Matt Kenseth has really come back to bite him in the ass. So it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on how he gets treated by the other drivers.
And the single file, why do you think the drivers, what were they to gain by driving single file and up by the wall at the farthest distance of the track, especially with the fuel mileage playing? As we watched Chase Elliott have some bumps with the fuel mileage, that's what they chalked up him going from first back to whatever he finished at. And we watched Kyle Larson run out as well. No one in the fuel miles was that close. Why did drivers finish this run single file and up on the outside like that?
It's kind of a follow the leader type thing. You don't want to get out of line if you don't have anybody that'll get out with you and run with you. Kyle Larson went to make a move and jumped down to the inside, but nobody moved down with him to help him. And he made a hell of a move getting back in line. But that's the thing about Daytona. If you don't have a drafting partner, you really can't pull out a line and try to race until the last of it, and then it's every man for himself.
Oh, before we jump into talking about Atlanta, what do you take away from this weekend? I know I caught highlights of the Xfinity series, and you, of course, missed all the truck races as well, and of course, you watched today's race. What did you take from this weekend, and what from this weekend are you excited to see move forward?
You know, it's like I said before, I think Ford needs to follow Toyota's lead and get their guys working more together. They're starting to work together now, but it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on how much they'll work together, how much the Ford teams will work together as a brand. So,
We had a lot of changes going into the season, and it was a lot to adjust to for the fans, for the drivers, for the team owners, and I think we all expect there to be some tweaking of the rules as the season progresses. If you were to guess, do you think any rules that you've seen so far is going to be tweaked this week, or is there any rules that you would like to see tweaked? I think the only thing that I might want to see is maybe give them a 4 minutes. I don't know, 5 minutes seems a pretty good amount of time, but, you know, thinking about it, there's only so much you can do in 5 minutes, and I'm sure there's probably a driver or a car or two that if they were given, you know, those 7 minutes, 8 minutes, or whatever the case may be, they might have been able to get back out there and been, you know, just as competitive if they would only had, you know, if they wouldn't have been in the wreck or whatever. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe give them another couple more minutes. Maybe. And one of the things that I'm trying to speak about differently. I know another thing that was a lot of complaints about was this in between the stages, those laps count under caution. And for some reason, that's like even Daytona, which is a bigger track, they're talking about 7 laps that are run under caution that we're losing. So we're automatically losing 14 laps out of the race, basically, at Daytona. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like at other tracks. Should there be a tweaking of that? Should those laps not count? I know that makes the race go longer than it technically would have been. Daytona 500 come off, but would you rather it be, you know, those laps not count and then have to run extra miles so we don't lose so many laps, or are you fine with the way they did it?
Well, Daytona is such an odd duck, so to speak, because under caution, you've got just about a minute to make a lap. So you've got plenty of time in the pits to work, but that strategy is going to change when they go to Atlanta to the mile and a half tracks and to the short tracks where the lap times are quicker under caution and you don't have as much time as you do at Daytona. So, that's why I'm on the fence about the segment racing. I want to see more of how it works out farther into the season, running the mile and a half, and especially the short tracks. I'm really waiting to see how that segment racing works on the short tracks and the strategy that they'll use there. Damn, I'm losing my voice. It's been so long since I've talked this much.
But from anything you saw this weekend, do you think there will be any tweaking come Tuesday or Wednesday? Or do you think that they're going to leave everything as is and let it play out a few more weeks?
I think there's going to be some teams that'll play it safe and some teams that'll be more aggressive. I look for crew chiefs like Chad Knauss to really – sit back and watch what happens and make a charge at the end where you've got other drivers that are going to try to grab those bonus points, and that's, kind of what NASCAR is hoping.
Yeah.
So I'm just wanting to wait and see what happens later on.
I think the weirdest thing to me about today's race was watching teams strategize backwards like they do a road course race. Of course, the road course race, they count backwards when they do their pit and strategize that way, and that's usually the only tracks that do that. Now with this whole stage, it was just unusual to watch teams pit just 20 laps into the race because they're counting backwards and getting their pit in and out, so they got to worry about everybody else. And don't have to worry about situations like that 83 car, and I forget the guy that said he would have wrecked his own mom and wrecked somebody in the qualifying race to get into Daytona. To watch him about plow Clint Bowyer over going into the pit, it was just unusual to see them all kind of work backwards on the pit strategy versus the normal Daytona or normal pit strategy than any other track other than the road course.
Yeah, it's definitely changed the strategy, and it's like you said, you're counting backwards from the end to where you can get in that pit window where you can pit and then make it to the end without pitting again. And you saw some teams, especially the Toyota teams, all took advantage of it and pitted together early, where the other team kind of waited till the middle to see how things shook out and then pitting then. And I think it kind of cost them at the end. There was a couple of teams that ran out of fuel at the end of the race. So maybe their pit strategy wasn't as good as what the Toyotas have, but it's an interesting deal, really is. It'll be interesting to see how it works out at other tracks to me.
Well, Mike's listening. Mike's over too. He's not kept up with all the driver team changes. He set his hands in 2016. He thought I screwed up to the 37 for Chris Buescher and listed the 34, which that was his car last year. Then he was the deputy, however you say his name, who drove 83 last year. So Mike's trying to play catch up in 2017. It's all about other tracks. We got Atlanta next weekend. Atlanta's one of those interesting tracks. Either NASCAR gets it right and Goodyear gets it right and everything falls into place and it's a very interesting race, or one of the elements is out of whack and it's like Charlotte is just falling out, and not a lot of action. You never know really what you're getting in Atlanta. What do you expect to see next weekend, and what do you hope to see next weekend?
I don't think you won't see, like today, the Toyotas hitting when the window opened. So, I don't think you'll see that. I think it'll be more of a case of running, racing and either catching a caution or trying to run the full segment without pitting. It'll be, it's going to be interesting. I'm really going to be interested in the strategy that different crew chiefs will have and everything. And I'm like you, I think Chris Buescher, if he was driving for a more well-funded team, he could be a lot bigger player, a lot stronger player in the race. If Chris Buescher was driving for Hendrick Motorsports, he could be a dominant driver because he would be at a well-funded team. And I think even though he's not well-funded, I still think he's capable of winning races. So I'll keep my eye on him and see how it goes.
And I agree, and definitely agree. And I hope that Chris Buescher, I hope that he helps her. You got AJ Allmendinger over there as well, and he's still kind of on the young side, but he's a veteran as well. And you know, this might be a great pairing. You get two young drivers, one with a little bit of experience, another one that's an Xfinity Series champion, and won a race at Pocono, got their team into the chase last year. This might be a great opportunity for both these drivers, almost like Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano. Pairing them together, Brad was a little bit more veteran than Joey at the time, and, you know, we see how that works. Hopefully JTG is able to step up and continue to put great products out there, and both these drivers, you know, mature together and coexist together like Logano and Brad, which that's just a weird pairing. Those two drivers, like, you just never thought you could pair anybody up with them two guys and really be successful like they have been over there at Penske. Hopefully JTG can step up, because you got two drivers that could possibly do the same thing.
I think those drivers are right at the edge. They're right at the edge of being race-winning drivers. I don't know what they lack. I don't think they lack talent. I don't think they lack anything with their team and their crew chiefs and engineers. I think they lack the funds to race harder. And I think they lack the help from another team, from a more dominant team like Hendrick Motorsports. Hendrick Motorsports could share information with JGR and really help those guys and push them over the edge into the winner's circle. It'll be interesting to see if they get more help. It's like they only need one more thing to put them on top. And I don't know exactly what that thing is. But it'll be interesting to see if they get together. And, you know, the pairing, Chris Buescher and A.J. Allmendinger, like you said, would be just like Logano and Keselowski. I think Buescher and Allmendinger are pretty much close to being on the same page. And I think today, you know, it was a new experience of them working together. And I think later on in the season as they work more together, that they'll become stronger than they are now. Working business, God, I hope my voice gets stronger.
Well, definitely for next week, I'm definitely hoping that we get to see more of the action leading up to the end of the stages. I was definitely happy with what I saw. Like it or not, I like the five-minute rule, so I'm hoping that also plays into effect next week. Like I said,
yeah.
It was if I remember correctly, there was not a single debris caution, which is great. That's one of the things that I hated, and one of the things I was excited for the five-minute rule. That eliminated that. There was nothing more aggravating to me than watching my favorite driver out front and then an unnecessary caution because somebody had no business being out there that was not irrelevant, just dropping stuff off the car. I didn't like that, so I'm hoping to see Atlanta play out the same way. But I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to seeing the excitement that builds up with this. You know, the stages, I'm ready to see what Monster Energy's got for round two, as they've found themselves in the news all weekend long, like I said. Daytona sold out, and you know, all the people out there talking about numbers and talking about viewership, I really sometimes scratch my head. I know that I've been to the tracks and it's been looked bare, and I know what the TV ratings are saying, and I think people take those numbers a little – I think they look into it a little too hard because nowadays
yeah.
there's just so many different ways to – I was watching part of yesterday's Xfinity Series race by someone recording it live on Facebook Live. I know it's illegal, and they said it, and they knew it was going to be taken down. They were testing something. But I watched part of the race yesterday just on Facebook, which those numbers don't get counted. There's so many different ways. I don't know if they can track it. I watched it on the Fire Stick today. We got one of those Fire Sticks so I can watch anything I want. I don't know if that's trackable or not. I downloaded the Fox Sports to go, and that's what I watch it on, so I'm assuming it was still trackable, but it's not going to count as a TV rating. I don't know because I was technically in an app. So I think because there's so many more avenues of being able to watch the race, I think those numbers are a little distorted, and I think people look too hard into it. And if you don't believe me, the Daytona 500 just sold out. So it wasn't like something changed all of a sudden. Everybody had an opportunity to watch Friday and Saturday, so it wasn't like everybody, oh, that's because Friday's race everybody wanted. No, if anything, that was kind of discouraging watching Friday night's race, watching all those wrecks and watching hardly any trucks left at the end of the race. But that to me is the first sign right there that this sport is definitely thriving, and I'm eager to see what Atlanta. I applied for Atlanta, and we applied for Vegas, and they closed. We didn't get denied. I'm assuming that it's just too many people that and there's tracks like that. It's just too many people trying to get in media wise. Because normally, if we're denied, it says denied. It'll either say approved, closed, or denied. And we've been approved for Kentucky already, so I'm getting my opportunity at the first, well, actually the second weekend of technically the second Sunday of July. We'll be in Kentucky for that race. So I'll get my opportunity to be out there to see the Monster Grills. I'll be able to get out there and see all the hype. I'll be able to see how packed it is and watch the stage racing behind the scenes and catch all that, what it's like. I am come Atlanta. I'm one of the big things I'm going to be looking for is to see the attendance, to see the viewing, the ratings, to see if this all this momentum leading into Daytona this year with all the changes, with the title sponsors, everything that's went on, plus Ford having a strong showing this weekend. I'm curious to see how much and how hard that impacts next weekend's ratings, attendance, and everything.
Yeah, it's like you said, the TV numbers are so misleading now because there's so many different ways to catch the races and parts of the races and everything. And I just think they're misleading, really. People can say, oh, the viewer, you know, the numbers are down. Well, yeah, the numbers are down, but at the same time, you know, there's other ways that people are following the race that's not being counted. So, you know, you could look today and see the grandstands were full, and there's a lot of people, like you said, like you were doing, you know, that are that are catching the races other ways and not being counted as TV ratings. So, you know, I don't put a lot of faith in those numbers. I'm more, you know, looking at the grandstand to see how many people are there.
Well, Steve, it's week one of the book. Definitely excited. Definitely looking forward to week two. Waiting to see the final points and see how that actually impacted Danica, who finished, I think, 33rd because she got caught up in the wreck. Still bonus points in the first segment. She got 10th. Second segment, she got 5th. So I'm kind of eager to see, look at the standings later on to see how much that kind of helped her out. Any other drivers, of course. Definitely looking forward to sitting down here next Sunday night, our new night and time for Rubbin' Is Racing, and be able to discuss Atlanta. Hopefully it's not such a wreck fest all weekend long. And hopefully I get everybody else to finally come all the way over on my side of the bench with this whole stage racing and everything. And I'm really excited on week two and see how all this plays out. And looking forward to sitting down here next Sunday night with you and talking about Atlanta.
Yeah, that was a good point you made. You know, Danica finished 33rd, but she didn't run 33rd. She ran a good race. So that, again, is kind of misleading to some people, but I think she's going to do all right. And, you know, I'm looking forward to Atlanta to see how things work out there. And I think we'll definitely have something to talk about next Sunday night.
Let the fans, before we get roughed out of here, let them know what you got going on Thursday, or at least let them know. I don't know if you got anybody booked yet, but at least let them know what time and what day, and then also let them know about your Facebook group, and I'm going to let them know what's going on tomorrow, and we'll get out of here for the night.
Yeah, I haven't got any guests lined up for Racing with Big Sweat yet, but I've got some invitations out. I'm just waiting to see if anybody responds. And, you know, it's kind of hard to get a response on race day, so I'm not giving up yet. So tune in Thursday night for Racing with Big Sweat. And my Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing, we had a great race thread today. We had a lot of people on the thread and a lot of people commenting. So if you like to talk racing during the race, you need to join that race thread. That group is NASCAR and Other Racing.
Make sure you guys tune in tomorrow night right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network for the 110 Nation Sports Show. I can't guarantee how long the show is going to be. It's supposed to be 7 to 10, but it's also my 39th birthday tomorrow. So we're going to see how this all works out. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Also, check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Check us out on Twitter, at 110 Nation. Check out our site, www.110nationsports.com. Got to thank Fit for Life, Snafu Seasoning, Paige Stockdale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without all these great marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and continue to grow. So I got to thank each and every last one of them. Also, we announced the other night, going to put out here on the show as well, we are a marketing partner with Taylor Lyon Racing. Looking forward to being on her number 11 machine this year for the full season. So looking forward to building a relationship with them. We do this. We try to support our local tracks and our local drivers. And every year we try to get one driver that we help be an impactful marketing partner and help financially help, support them and socially, social media-wise and show-wise. Taylor Lyons happened to be the driver that we are backing this year. So I wanted to throw that out there. But Looking forward to tomorrow night on the One Fin Nation Sports Show. Looking forward to hanging out with Steve and Chris on Thursday night, 9 o'clock, racing with Big Sweat. And looking forward to being back here Sunday night, our new night. It's just weird. I keep wanting to say Monday. But looking forward to being back here Sunday night, 7 o'clock, for another night of Remnants Racing. Steve, thanks for joining me tonight. Everybody have a great night, and we'll talk to y'all later.
Good night.